You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show.
We're continuing our look at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with Greg McKinnon and forward by Stephen Covey. Last show we were looking at different types of multipliers, specifically the challenger. Subsection, extend a concrete challenge. Sean Mendley works as director of an after-school program in East Palo Alto, California, a city that in 1992 had the highest per capita murder rate in the United States, and a city where dropping out of high school was the norm. Sean himself faced many challenges growing up, but he went on to attend graduate school from Cornell University. After graduation, Sean decided to spend a year at the Boys and Girls Club of the Peninsula. 4 years later, he can't bring himself to leave. Even now, after being accepted into a graduate program at Stanford, he can find him doing his homework at the club beside youth half his age. With a journey like Sean's, he has ample reason to tell teens he works with that what they need to do to succeed. But instead of telling, he challenges. When Sean first met Tijuana Robinson, or Taji, she was a shy, hesitant 12-year-old. When she reluctantly shook his outstretched hand, he stopped her with a big smile and said, quote, "You know, there are three things you might want to do when you meet someone. First, look them in the eye. Second, give them a firm hand. Third, shake their hand up and down about three full times." Taji was appalled but intrigued. Sean continued to extend small, specific challenges to her. He asked Taji if she would take a newspaper class. She did. Then he encouraged her to write a main article for the school paper, met regularly with a writing tutor, and learned how to write great essays. Again, she did. Next, he encouraged her to raise the bar and compete in her school's Scholar of the Year competition. She won. Sean extends these challenges by asking the youth hard questions and then giving them the space to think and respond. As Taji put it, "He taught me how to think for myself." This allows youth like Taji to strengthen intellectual muscles and build the confidence they need to tackle the hardest challenges. Early on with Taji, Sean looked her in the eye and asked, "If you could get out of this environment, what would you do?" There was a long silence. Finally, Taji said, "I would go to college." Sean responded, "What would it take for you to do that?" After several moments of reflection, her eyes lit up. "I need to get into the right high school." They set a goal for Taji to earn a scholarship to one of the top-tier prep schools in the surrounding area. Sean asked, "Where should we start?" Taji led the process, but together they figured out which schools would be the best fit. They completed applications and applied her high school interviews. Then, the night before one of the biggest interviews, Taji's family left her at home to do her homework while they went out for a drive. As the family pulled up to a stop sign, a gunman approached the car, firing multiple bullets into the vehicle that was transporting three small children. Taji's older cousin was shot in the back, and her six-year-old sister was shot in the leg. Nobody died, but it was traumatic in every conceivable way. The next morning, Sean suggested Taji might want to reschedule the high school interview they had planned, but through her emotions, she yelled, "This is how I'm going to get out of here. This is what I need to do to have the kind of life I want. And this is how I can help my family to make sure it doesn't happen again." She wiped her tears, went to the interview, and blew away everyone she met. Tijuana was accepted to four competitive preparatory schools, earning full scholarships to each. She now attends Sacred Heart, a private school in Atherton, California, and has flourished into a resilient, motivated, and strikingly bright 14-year-old girl. Out of the 17 students in Sean's 8th grade program, 12 have received scholarships to preparatory schools, and the other 5 have entered rigorous college track programs. Sean served as a challenger, helping these youth raise their aspiration levels and build the mental agility they would need to get and stay on a course of success. Whether it is Matt McCauley at Gymboree extending the $2 challenge, or Shea Agassi inviting his team to find a way to change a battery in less than 5 minutes, or Sean Menley issuing a college-bound challenge, our research showed that multipliers use their intelligence to make challenges concrete for others. These challenges become tangible and measurable, allowing people to assess their performance. By making a challenge real, they allow others to visualize the achievement and communicate the confidence that the organization has the collective brain power required. This confidence is essential because the challenge will demand the entire organization to extend beyond its current reach and capabilities. Ask the hard questions. Diminishers give answers. Good leaders ask questions. Multipliers ask really hard questions. They ask the questions that challenge people not only to think, but to rethink. They ask questions so immense that people can't answer them based on their current knowledge or where they currently stand. To answer these questions, the organization must learn. Enabled by these big questions, a vacuum is created. It is a vacuum between what people know and what they need to know to answer the question. It is also a vacuum between what they currently do and what they need to be able to do. This vacuum creates a deep tension in the organization and raises the need to reduce that tension. It is like a rubber band that is stretched to its limit. One side needs to move towards the other to reduce the tension. Matt McCauley at Gymboree created this forward pull when he asked each member of his organization, "What is your mission impossible?" Shai Agassi created this tension at Better Place when he asked, "How would we build an infrastructure to switch batteries from any electric car anywhere in the world and do it cheaply?" Let others fill in the blanks. How do multipliers get people to step up to a challenge? They shift the burden of thinking to others. Initially, when they establish a concrete challenge, the burden of the thinking sits on them as the leader. But by asking the hard questions, inviting others to fill in the blanks, they are shifting the burden of thinking onto their people. The intellectual onus now sits with the team to understand the challenge and find a solution. It is in this shift that the multiplier creates intelligence and energy around him or herself. After assuming leadership of a new division in a large consumer electronics company in Korea, the CEO called his management team together and informed them of his goal to be number one in the market and to become a magnet company attracting top college graduates. He was clear that the trajectory for his organization would not be incremental. He had a vision of something big. He then engaged a broad array of stakeholders in analyzing how to achieve the number one position. The coalition included key executives, founding family members, and outside consultants. Assembling the coalition, he needed the opportunity and posed a difficult question such as, why are we in this business? And do we deserve to be in this business? And what would it take to better our competition? These questions cut to the bones of the organization and stirred up chaos. Yet he never backed down. His tension forced the team to generate answers. He asked the hard questions and then let the team fill in the blanks. As they did, he maintained a tight tie frame. He said, I don't need 100% answers. I need a 30% answer in 2 days. Give me a 30% answer so we can talk about it and decide if it makes sense for you to find a 50% answer. And if we get there, we'll block 2 months to get a 100% answer. In the end, there were clear answers. The process took months and was scrappy, but it built the intellectual muscle, the energy, and the energy the organization needed for the challenge. Laying down a challenge means more than directing people to do it. It includes asking the hard questions that no one yet has the answers to, and then backing off so that the people within the organization have the space to think through the questions, take ownership, and find the answers. When a multiplier has successfully laid down the challenge, people see the stretch, are intrigued, and become intellectually engaged. The burden of thinking has shifted to the organization. This process of ownership and stretch continues to build energy by creating the intellectual muscle for the challenge. 3. Generate belief. By seeding the opportunity, laying down a challenge, people are interested in what is possible. But this isn't enough to create movement. Multipliers generate belief, the belief that the impossible is actually possible. It isn't enough for that people see and understand the stretch. They need to actually stretch themselves. The following are a few ways we discovered that multipliers produce this belief in the organizations. Helicopter down. One way multipliers generate belief is by taking the challenge down to the level K.R. Sribhar, CEO of Bloom Energy, whose vision is to produce power generators for homes and businesses at half the carbon emissions of traditional power generators, who explained, quote, the direction needs to be improbable but not impossible. It can't just exist at 30,000 feet. It has to be at the 1,000-foot level. It is irresponsible to ask your team to do something if the CEO exposure is only at the 30,000-foot level. You have to take it down and show that it can be done. You have to show them a pathway and show why it can be done. You only need to do this once to create the belief. By helicoptering down to the reality, multipliers create a meaningful proof point that a bold challenge can be successfully met. Lay out a path. Shay Agassi is a master of making the impossible seem possible. When he was leading the technology organization at SAP, he challenged the team to build a rapid deployment package that would allow a mid-sized company to install SAP in less than 7 days. This was unheard of, as a typical SAP implementation is measured in months, not days. But he didn't just issue this outrageous challenge. He helped find the path. He and his team analyzed historical implementations and found that 90% of the implementations shared the same features and discovered that this configuration worked for most mid-sized companies. With this insight, the team could see a path forward towards a 7-day implementation program, and they proceeded to make it happen. Co-create the plan. When people create the plan they eventually will implement, belief in its viability is inherently high. Led by Ray Lane in 1996, Oracle not only built a strategic intent, but also built a deep belief within the organization that Oracle would lead the internet era. Because 250 senior leaders were given the opportunity to co-create the corporate energy strategy, they understood the challenge ahead and knew that actions would be necessary to achieve it. They had built the collective will and energy needed to execute. The organization was ready to take the challenge. Orchestrate an early win. Sometimes the temptation exists for leaders to tackle too many problems at once. Our research showed that multipliers begin with small, early wins and use these to generate belief towards the greater stretch challenges. Consider Nobel Prize winner Wangari Maathai. In her words, quote, "I was hearing many Nairobi women complain that they didn't have enough firewood. They were also complaining that they did not have enough water. Why not plant trees?" I asked them. And so they just started very, very, very small. And before long, they started showing each other. Communities began empowering each other to plant trees for their own needs. From just 7 original trees planted by Wangari on June 5th, 1977, on World Environment Day, the Green Belt Movement has successfully planted more than 40 million trees in Africa. And of course, the movement goes way beyond trees. Wangari has written, quote, "Many people don't understand that the tree is just the entry point. It is an easy point because it is something that people understand. It is something that people can do themselves. It is not very expensive to do, and you don't need too much technology to do it. But once we get into the community through tree planting, we deal with a lot of other issues. We deal with issues of governance, issues of human rights, issues of conflicts and peace, issues of long-term resource management. Senior leaders in corporations can generate belief about significant challenges by orchestrating small early wins. When the multiplier has generated belief in what is possible, the weight shifts and the organization is willing to leave the realm of the known and venture into the unknown." The Academy Award-winning documentary Man on Wire chronicles the feat of renowned high wire artist Philippe Petit in 1974 as he walked a tightrope stretch 140 feet across the expanse between the 1,368-foot-high Twin Towers and the World Trade Center in New York City. In the movie, Petit explains the moment of truth when he stood at the edge of one tower with his back foot on the building and his front foot on the cable. He recalled, "I had to make a decision of shifting my weight from one foot anchored to the building and one foot anchored on the wire. This is probably the end of my life to step on that wire. On the other hand, something I could not resist called me up on that onto that cable. I have seen the shift of weight happen many times inside organizations. You can almost feel the energy of the organizations begin to tip in a new direction. The shift happens when an individual or organization has fully embraced a challenge and has generated the belief in what is possible. It is not a multiplier who whips up this belief. Rather, it is the challenge he or she has issued that generates this commitment. This challenge process builds the intellectual muscle, the emotional energy, and the collective intent to move forward. Multipliers orchestrate the process needed to shift the weight of an organization."
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with Greg McKinnon, forward by Stephen Covey. We're looking at the chapter on multipliers in organizations, specifically the challenger. Now we're going to look at something slightly different, the diminisher's approach to setting direction. In contrast to the multipliers, diminishers have a fundamentally different approach to providing direction. Instead of using their intelligence to enable people to stretch forward a future opportunity, they give directions in a way that showcases their superior knowledge. Instead of seeding an opportunity and laying out a believable challenge, diminishers tell and test, like the stereotypical know-it-all. And they tell people what they know. They tell people to do their jobs. They test other people's knowledge to see if they're doing it right. Tell what they know. Diminishers consider themselves thought leaders and readily share their knowledge. However, they rarely share it in a way that invites contribution. They tend to sell their ideas rather than learning what others know. One manager in Europe took up all the oxygen in the room by talking endlessly about his ideas. A peer said of him, quote, "He was so busy sharing what he thinks, there is no space for anyone else," unquote. A direct report added to this insight, quote, "I have worked in the same department with him for 10 years, and he has never asked me a question, not once, not ever. I have occasionally heard him ask a question to the universe, and I wonder why we do X. But even then, he fills the silence with his own thoughts about the answer." Test what you know. When diminishers do actually engage others, to no surprise, it is at an auditor. They want to verify that you understand what they know. They ask questions to make a point rather than to give greater insight or to generate collective learning. Like Richard Palmer, the founder discussed earlier, they are masters of the gotcha question. Diminishers leave people stressed but unstretched. Tell people how to do their jobs. Rather than shifting responsibility to other people, diminishers stay in charge and tell others in detail, often painful detail, how to do their jobs. They assume the senior thinking posture, giving themselves permission to generate both the questions and the answers. One such diminisher was Chip Maxwell, an executive producer on the major motion picture production set. Despite the fact that the director had carefully assembled a world-class team of talent, Chip was constantly interfering in the team's work, routinely bypassing the director to tell his staff exactly how to do their jobs. The director of photography abruptly resigned in the middle of filming, claiming that if Chip seemed to know how to light the shot better than he did, then maybe he could be the DP. This award-winning DP knew the number of lights needed, and he certainly knew where to put them. He also knew his talents would be better used on another film. Diminishers often unintentionally shut down the intelligence of others. Most diminishers have built a career on their own expertise and have been rewarded for their superior knowledge. For many, it is not until they reach a career plateau or crisis that the director of photography quits in the middle of filming, that they begin to recognize that their base assumptions are inaccurate and limited themselves and others. A colleague of mine recently took an IQ test and received a score of 144. He was exuberant and claimed that it was just one point shy of certified genius status. No doubt he was envisioning his welcome letter from Mensa. On learning of our research, his enthusiasm became a bit dampened. Wow, I have worked all my life to prove I am a genius, and just at the point where I can say that I am, I learn that it doesn't even matter anymore. Unquote. Of course, this is only half right. Raw mental horsepower is still relevant, but the most important leaders are those who not only have this mental horsepower themselves, but also know how to multiply it by accessing and stretching other people's intelligence. Consider the difference between a leader who yearns for an additional IQ point to take their IQ to 145, which is the official genius level, and others who use their intelligence to add an IQ point to every person in the organization. What could your organization accomplish if every person became effectively one point smarter? There are times when a leader is so knowledgeable and personally brilliant that it seems tempting for them to provide directives centered on what they know. However, in the end, know-it-alls limit what their organization can achieve to what they themselves know how to do. Under their leadership, the organization never leverages its full intelligence, and the true capacity of the organization is idled away or becomes consumed by the fire drill of figuring out what the boss is thinking. How the challenger achieves resource leverage. Why do challengers get more from their often limited resources? By playing the challenger instead of the know-it-all. They access more brains, get those brains working faster, and earn the full discretionary effort of their people. Once they have a clear view of latent opportunities and challenges, they understand that there are no resources worthy of waste. Wisdom tells them that it is imperative to engage all intelligence and capabilities in service of these opportunities. The following chart demonstrates why know-it-alls leave so much intelligence on the table while challengers pull in so much from their people. Know-it-alls, what they do, give directions that showcase their knowledge. What they get, distracted efforts as people vie for the attention of the boss. Idle cycles in the organization as people wait to be told what to do or to see if the boss will change direction again. An organization that doesn't want to get ahead of the boss. In contrast, challengers, what they do. They define opportunities that challenge people to go beyond what they know and how to do it. What they get. Collective intent towards the same overarching opportunities. Rapid cycles and accelerated problem solving without the initiation of the formal leader. People's discretionary effort and intellectual energy to take on the toughest organizational challenges. When leaders operate as challengers, teams are able to accelerate their performance. Because the organization does not have to wait for the leader to think of it first, they can solve tougher problems at an accelerated rate. Because people understand the context, they can act for themselves rather than wait to be told or approved. Consider the contrast and impact that this diminisher and this multiplier had on the productivity and velocity of their organizations. A diminisher creates idle cycles. Highly intelligent vice president at a major global technology firm was accomplished to a fast-paced and demanding environment. He was a competitor in the market who never stopped challenging himself and others. However, after transferring to a division led by a classic know-it-all, he found himself idle most of the time. He said, quote, I spend most of my time waiting for my boss to make decisions. In the meantime, I can't do much else. I'm essentially working part-time. I'm bored, but I'm enjoying taking sailing lessons. Unquote. This vice president was ready for a high-speed battle, but was relegated to easy sailing. A multiplier creates rapid cycles. And this is something that we're going to explore in the next show, the contrast, compare and contrast the difference between how a diminisher operates in an organization and how a multiplier operates within an organization. So please come back and listen to the ongoing series on this really fascinating book.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Tenneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
The staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a